This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 5, Episode 32. Free weights versus body weight. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about the difference between using machines, using free weights and using body weight. We also unleash our inner Jamies with some food and recipe advice, and we talk about helping a young spin bowler with his hip rotation. All that and more coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's time for another Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's here that you can learn all about how to play better cricket. If you're a batsman, if you're a bowler, if you're a fielder, if you're a wicketkeeper, it doesn't make any difference to us. You can get some tips and tricks and ideas and some ways to boost your game in all kinds of different environments. My name's David Hinchliffe. I look after things. And joining me, as always, it's the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garras. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well indeed.
You've been doing some planning for the forthcoming off-season?
Yeah, very much so. That's pretty much a topic of conversation and workload at the moment. It's just getting all of the programmes in place. We've got a number of different players that have got a number of different demands on them. So I think we've got five or six going up to some talent tests, and normally you'd get September off as a transition period, but those guys will be working up and towards those talent tests, and then there's others obviously that are in transition and review and all of those sort of things. So yeah, it's an exciting time of year because it sort of, you know, it gets everything going for the winter really.
Yeah, and planning of course is an important element of the game. Is there anything particularly new this year, a new challenge this year that you haven't come across before?
Not really. I mean, we're trying to develop a method of playing positive cricket, I suppose, going throughout all the age group squads, and it will be reviewing how we went against some of those things and also making some emphases from that. You know, last year we did two or three things at the top end of a school that were really exciting in terms of some branding of cricket. I suppose I hate the word branding, but, you know, positive yeah. cricket type stuff. We'll be looking to make sure that that goes throughout the school and also into the prep school as well, so we've got a bit of consistency going through. Positive cricket is positive cricket. It's just a matter of reviewing it, monitoring how you're going against it, and then making some plans based on the things that you're good at and also the things that you need to work at.
And of course, speaking of positive cricket, there's a man who always plays positively. He's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School and is well known for being stumped second ball for six. It's Sam Lavery.
Hello, how are you?
Hiya, Labours. I'm sure that's not true.
Absolutely not, no.
Very sensible player.
Boring, push it back. Try and find a single, let the other guy whack it.
So what are you up to at the moment, apart from blocking?
I am just trying to catch up with a few of the boys, actually, from our under-15s team, who we've got... We've got a fixture, actually, a school fixture next week, and hopefully two fixtures next week in preparation for our national under-15 2020 final, which is on the 7th of September, so not far away, which will be over at Arundel. So we're just trying to get back in touch with some of the boys and have a couple of days with them together so they can get some cricket together as a group again. And hopefully I'll catch up with a few of them individually as well. Prior to then, so just trying to get back in touch with those guys and get some preparation done for what is left in the season, which isn't too much, and then also doing some work with the club boys at Burridge and organising them for hopefully what will be a good finish to the season and establishing ourselves as a Premier League club for the next few years after they've come up through the lower divisions over the last couple of years.
I want to switch the subject away because I've been thinking a little bit about food recently, as I often do. Food and cricket are two things which are integrated into each other quite tightly, I think. Now, none of us, of course, are nutritionists, but we all eat. So I was hoping maybe to get some thoughts, some experiences and some ideas, maybe bring out your inner Jamie Oliver and tell us a little bit about how food can help with cricket or maybe not help with cricket. What's your personal experiences, Garras, when it comes to that kind of thing?
Well, I think it's a huge part of the game, isn't it? You know, we can stop twice for food during a match, which has always been something which has amused, but entertained and pleased me numerous times in my career.
Absolutely.
But I think that there's some different approaches, aren't there, to it that are now creeping in. And one of the things that I found very interesting is that there was a difference when I played English cricket to when I played in South Africa. And in South Africa, you would often take your own food with you. Mm. So you'd do your own lunch, you'd do your own tea. So you'd just take that along with yourself. And occasionally, you know, you'd swap a sandwich or whatever with your mates. But just having that responsibility of what you're actually putting into your food actually made you more aware of what was going in there. And you took a little bit more accountability for what you're eating. And I found that quite interesting. And we've got this traditional thing over here that somebody brings a tease, whether it's a tea lady or somebody is assigned to put that together.
It's not that healthy.
And often we, you know, there aren't the healthiest things put into them. Whereas in South Africa, you know, the onus is on yourself, I suppose, to look after yourself, really. And you're not trying to keep everybody happy. You just know what you need to perform best on the day. And for some people, it might be to chuck in a Mars bar. And for other people, it might be to, you know, keep it high protein and all the things that we talk about on this show. But it certainly put the onus on me to make sure that I was fueling myself properly throughout the day. And I wonder whether it's something that might creep into cricket outside of South Africa. And there may be people listening to the podcast now which that already happens, that have got a lot of experience of taking their own food to games and taking responsibility for what they fuel themselves with.
Yeah, the way I've always looked at those traditional cricket teas is that as long as everything else is in order throughout the rest of the week, then you can get away with it a little bit if you have a scone and a tuna sandwich at tea time. It used to concern me a little bit, I suppose, thinking, oh gosh, this is an unhealthy meal. But if you're healthy most of the time, then I don't think it matters too much. What about you, Lavers? What experiences have you had around food and cricket?
Well, I think with everyone's probably had some incredible experiences, and they've been to places where they're served up a wide range of incredible starters, mains and desserts all at the same time. And then I think we've all had those awful days where you're very, very poorly looked after. So yeah, quite a wide range. I actually think when I was in Australia, I remember a similar instance to what Gareth was talking about there. But what happened there was everyone brought an item that contributed towards the tea. So each player brought something which contributed towards the tea, as opposed to bringing their own food. So that meant they had to speak during the week and they had to organise who was bringing this and who was bringing that. And that worked quite well. Yeah. The majority. I mean, one thing it did, again, Gareth used the word accountable. It made them think about what they were bringing and what they were preparing. And it also I think it made them a bit more of a team again, because suddenly the guy who's in charge, or maybe the best player who's often the big personality or is one of the leaders within the change rooms, when it comes to the food, it's maybe one of the other guys who has less of an impact who takes control and gets on with it. So good to let different people lead things in different ways within the same group.
There's definitely a culture around cricket, certainly in the UK, Gareth, as I've noticed, where, you know, it's not necessarily the healthiest nutrition that comes first.
Yeah, I think it's more convenience, or you get the other end of the spectrum where you get the incredibly proud tea lady, don't you, who just does an amazing job. And I remember back to a cricket club not too far away from you, David, which Usk Cricket Club.
Oh yeah.
Who I have to say put on the best spread that I've ever experienced at a game of cricket. We had a 4-day match there, and by the time we went back over the Severn Bridge after having won that game, we needed a couple of days off, to be honest, because I think we'd exerted less energy on the field than we'd consumed in the clubhouse. So, you know, which was fantastic for us at the time, but I'm not sure whether necessarily that would go in with the modern day thinking. But, you know, you get those two ends of the spectrum today, and it's either a packet of crisps and some confectionery of some sort chucked in, or alternatively you get the ghettos and the, all of that that these wonderful ladies put on at Us Cricket Club for us. So, you know, as I say, I just wonder where we're going to go with it all. Certainly the experiences that Sam's had in Australia and myself in South Africa have impacted upon my own thinking of it. And then obviously when I was with the England side, nutrition was incredibly important. It's probably gone a little bit too far now, looking at the dossier that they had in Australia a couple of years ago. But certainly when we were there, you know, the basics applied. And I was interested when I was over with Ireland, Cricket Australia sent to me their requirements for a one-day international. And actually the food was incredibly basic, good basics, but basic nonetheless. And interestingly, I was able to cut the budget by putting on some quality food rather than putting the things on that you sort of expect to have around games of cricket. And we've now mirrored that at Millfield and taken large chunks of that Australian document and made it a part of our own catering at school. And whilst it, you know, a couple of people turn their noses up about it first couple of weeks, it's now part and parcel of a cricket day at Millfield School. And as I say, you know, it's pretty cheap stuff to put on because they're basic food commodities. Now it's very much part of what we do.
Okay, I tell you what, let's wrap this up with a...
Boom, boom. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. Nice play on words.
With a very quick, easy and healthy recipe for each of us that would help a cricketer who wants to get into that a little bit more. I'll start. You take chicken breast, one tomato, a clove of garlic, and some onions chopped up. Fry them all together with some cumin and some salt. Add in some chickpeas to fill it out a little bit and serve. And it's absolutely delicious. All in one pan. Lavers, what have you got? Don't say beans on toast.
I'll actually go for one which is a well-known football recipe, but it's very good for general energy requirements and protein intake. And it's one for the from the great Alan Shearer, which he ate before every game he ever played, and that's chicken and beans.
Chicken and beans. In the oven?
Chicken and beans. Never specified a cooking method, actually. I'm not sure.
Well, you got to give us the recipe.
Yeah, chicken.
Yeah.
And beans.
Yeah.
There you go.
Step one.
Step one, cook the chicken. Step two, cook the beans. Step three, eat the chicken and beans.
Well, I think your Michelin star is a long way away, Lavers. Gareth, come on, you've got something better for us than that, surely.
Well, I'm going to go chicken skewers. And so there's a bit of a chicken theme here, but, you know, protein being something that we want to get into people. So you just get a wooden skewer, you put cubes of chicken through that. You can actually add in things like peppers, in between the pieces of chicken to break up and to add a little bit of colour. I'd smear a little bit of barbecued sauce on it and a touch of pepper, stick it on a barbecue or under a grill, rotate them fairly regularly. You can cook for about 10 to 12 minutes with that because they're pretty thin pieces of meat. Stick that down. You can have some couscous on the side that you can just have with your water from your kettle, just fluff that up a little bit, stick that on the side. And I'm a big fan of things like butter beans and chickpeas, as you say, as well, just to bulk it out and to give you the right sort of thing. So you've got in there a nice little meal, maybe a bit of balsamic glaze put over the top of the couscous.
Okay, so that's the end of the show. I'm off to get something to eat and see you next week. No, 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 not yet. No, I'll have to wait. My grumbling stomach will have to wait. Let's have the yes-no round. Three questions that we can only answer yes or no to, no matter how much more that we want to say. Okay, here comes the first question. Boxing offers the most crossover to the cricketer.
No.
No.
Second question. The only rest worth taking is earned rest.
Yes.
No.
Third question. Cuppa?
No.
Yes, please.
Time now for the mailbag. A couple of questions that we pick out every week. And we answer those questions to the best of our ability. And then we give the best one, as decided by Gareth at the end of the show, a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can email your questions into us for future shows on coach@pitchvision.com. First question here I've got is from Swapneil. And Swapneil says, I'm 16 years old and I need some help in off spin. My problem is that my hip rotation is very late. Even at the time of release, my hips are still closed. And because of that, I'm not able to use my fingers on the ball properly. Can you help me? I need my hip to rotate earlier.
Well, I think the starting point for me would be to have a look at the alignment of the hips and the alignment of a run-up, which is probably causing the hips to close off so extravagantly against the target that it's unlikely that those hips are going to fully rotate back and then slow and stabilise as we need them to do. So then the momentum through the hip girdle go up into the shoulder girdle and then ultimately up into the ball and into the fingers. So that would be my first point of call. I'm not sure it's an anatomical challenge that you have here. I think it's more of a biomechanical one in terms of the way that your hips are lined up against you and against your target. If it is an anatomical one it needs, you know, physio and it needs doctors and all of that sort of thing, and obviously any good coach would realize that they get to the end of their sphere of expertise, and then they would pass on and work with those specialists to try and find a solution. But the most normal thing is that your approach might be too acute in terms of its angle. So if you're bowling, then you might be blocking yourself off so significantly that you aren't allowing your hips to get round by the time you need to let go of the ball. And that sequencing from ground force up through the legs into the hips and into the shoulder girdle, into the fingers, and then ultimately into the revolutions on the ball isn't happening. So that would be my first point of call. If that is the case, and obviously without video, it's not an easy thing for us to have to tame, then one of the best ways to do to start to work on that is to reverse chain. So therefore, get your hips and your delivery position in the right place and then work your way back. So once you've mastered bowling from the place you want your feet to land and getting the ball down the other end, it doesn't have to go all the way down the other end because obviously you've not got momentum behind you at this point because you're stationary in the crease. But then you go back and you start to incorporate the hip rotation. Once you've nailed that and you've got that feeling that the hips are then going up through the shoulders, into the fingers and into the ball, then you take that back a bit and you put a run-up or a walk-up, depending on what your preference is, into your bowling action. So to me, if you are blocking yourself off, which it sounds like there's a good chance that you will be able to, you are doing that, then I would go for some reverse chaining, starting in the stirrups, as I call it, in the crease line with your feet in the right place, and then working your way back, building up a bit of a mastery of each of those positions before you take it back to a full run-up or a full approach and see how you go from them. But absolutely right. One of the key things that we see with spinners is that because they don't get their body working for them, they then start to propel the ball with their fingers rather than rotating the ball with the fingers. And there's Mohammed Haroon, who's a fantastic spin coach, and Mushtaq Ahmed, two brilliant spin coaches that I've worked with, have talked about over the years is that the fingers spin the ball, the body action propels the ball, and that's very, very important.
With a lot of young cricketers, I see first of all alignment issues, largely because there are big lads running through bowling quick. So where does the spinner stand? Just stands across to the side. He's in a net waiting for his go. Quick, it's my go. Nip in and bowl, but he's running in from 45 degrees and he's getting closed off simply because the big fast lads are running through. So that's always one to keep an eye on. Just make sure that your spinners take the time, they get into position, so they make sure their starting point of their run-up's good. And that then in turn allows their jump and their landing position to be well aligned towards their target.
Yeah, that's a nice little tip that you see that quite a lot. Almost, keeping the spinners in a separate net if you can afford it, if you've got enough spinners and enough batsmen.
If you can, that's great, yeah. And obviously, lots of coaches, lots of clubs are restricted with facilities and what they've got. And it can become frustrating. But if there is an opportunity to let spinners bowl in their group, let fast bowlers bowl in their group, it's also useful for the batters as well, so they can focus on one type of batting and a specific set of skills at a certain time. But letting the spinners or encouraging them to walk out into the middle,
get the fast bowlers out of the way and let them start their run up from the right place will help.
Yeah, it's helpful if you've got more than one spinner, isn't it? I know in my club there's two spinners and they will just go off and do their own thing. They'll bowl at each other, basically. And they don't have to worry about what's going on with batsmen or fast bowlers or anything else. They can just concentrate on doing the things that they need to do with getting their action right. And so even if you haven't got necessarily two nets or enough space to do that, then maybe you've got a space somewhere where two spinners can go away and just do their own thing for a little bit before they have to come back into the net and bowl at a batsman.
Absolutely. I think we're at my club, we're actually quite lucky that we get to train on the square every week. We get three or four wickets on the square every single session. But with the spinners, the groundsman's actually quite happy for the spinners to go and bowl on the square at any time because he's not too worried about the damage that it might do, and it's not going to make a lot of impact on the pitch as well. So they often will go up, and a lot of teams will have two spinners in, as you said, yours does there. So them going away and doing something like that is great for them to go and bowl in the middle of the pitch as well. But the quick bowlers don't usually get the same reaction from the groundsman if they start marking out their run up in a place they're not meant to be. So they usually stick to doing what they do in the nets, but that's absolutely fine for them to do that.
He runs out brandishing the sweeping broom, does he?
Yeah, he's probably something a bit more aggressive than a broom.
A 10-pound sledge.
Yeah, whatever. The biggest, heaviest, sharpest thing he can find.
He's coming at them with his mower. Okay, there you go, Swapnil. Hope that helps. Let's move on to the next question, and it's our good old friend, Bonga. And Bonga's back in touch, and he says, "Hey, coach, I'm lucky enough to have a gym membership. The problem is I'm not allowed to use the free weights as I'm too young. Should I use the machines or do body weight workouts at home?"
Well, first of all, it's great that we've got someone who's young. I'm not sure if we can remember. We've had Bonga before, haven't we?
Yep.
Do we have an age from him? We can't. I can't remember that.
I can. He was 13 this time last year. So law of average, well, September last year. So law of average suggests that he's turned 14 at some point. So let's go with he's 14.
Given then that Bonga is 14, or he's got his 14th birthday coming up, he's around about that age. First of all, it's great that he's looking at working on his fitness, and he's trying to get himself clearly a bit stronger is obviously one thing he's thinking about. I think it's not uncommon for most gyms to say that free weight users are usually 16 and above. So don't be surprised at that. But it's done for a reason. It's done for a safety reason, to make sure that, first of all, that the people are fully aware of what they're doing, and also that their bodies are able to cope with what they're going to be doing. I would suggest that he looks to use a combination of the two, because there are various body weight exercises which work in a free weights manner, if that makes sense, which he can do at home, which no doubt he's aware of because he's already talking about it. So I think they're things he's done before. So he can continue with them. But obviously, with just body weight exercises, it's not always easy to work all the muscle groups. So there may be some machines which he can use, which can target certain muscle groups that he can't quite do to the same manner just with simple body weight exercises. So I would suggest go down the combination route. Work out, as always, be quite clear in what you're trying to work and when you're trying to work it. So make sure you're timing it correctly through the week, or you're timing it correctly in relation to your fixtures, training sessions and games. There's loads of information, obviously, on the Pitch Vision site about how to structure your training program. So that's something you can look into if you haven't done already. But yeah, look for a combination of the two. And you should find that as you develop at your age, you'll make quite rapid gains over the initial two or three months. And hopefully it transfers into your cricket and you find yourself generating a little bit more power as you go along as well.
Yeah, and I'll give a practical example of what you're talking about there, Lavers, in the difference between pushing and pulling movements. So a good example of a pushing movement might be the chest press machine that you would use in the gym, or the press up. With the chest press machine, that'll improve your strength. So will the press up, but the press up also has other benefits. For example, better core stability, better body awareness, and better awareness of the position of your shoulder blade, which is very important, especially if we're talking about bowling and throwing. So there's a good example of where a body weight exercise can have benefits over a machine, but a machine can still have a place.
Absolutely key. I think you were going to say what I was going to say, so I'll let you continue.
But on the other hand, if you're talking about pulling exercises, like a row, for example, if you were to do, say, a chin-up or an inverted row, which is kind of like the opposite of a bench press, where you hold a secure bar and you pull yourself towards it, then that is slightly different from doing, say, a seated row with a machine, where you're pulling the weight, you're sitting down and you're pulling the weight towards you. And again, it's scapular positioning can be an important aspect of that, especially when you're talking about one-arm stuff. It's quite hard to do one-arm stuff with body weight, generally speaking, because you don't generally tend to have the strength to be able to do it, whereas you can adjust the weight of a machine and get that right. So you can do one-arm and two-arm stuff a lot easier when it comes to pulling. Gareth, how did the players at school find that balance?
Well, we do. Obviously, we're looking at them very closely all of the time. We've got two strength and conditioning coaches that do that. And whilst it's easy to go on chronological age, also you've got to go on biological age and in when you progress people. So we've got a couple of guys around Bongo's age that have been introduced to using free weights now because they are ready. And I think that's the crucial bit that a lot of people miss out on. They sort of go, well, I get the 16 and then I can start using them. Well, to me, it's not quite as simple as that, because as we know, we get 16-year-olds who are physically very mature and actually could have been missing out on an opportunity to get involved in some free weights work, particularly alongside a gym instructor at an earlier age. And equally, you have 16-year-olds that haven't quite reached the right physical maturity to be able to deal with that properly. So I think that's a point that I want to add on, is that we're not just looking at how old somebody is, but their biological age as well, just particularly at that stage of life where there's such a variance between one person and another.
Just on that, Gareth, I would imagine, though, however, that in Bongo's situation, and potentially quite a lot of people's situation, they'll almost have to bow down to the rules of the gym.
Correct.
And if the gym says you've got to be 16, then it's quite difficult to get around. And obviously with your boys, and they get a pretty much a world-class service, don't they? So they can almost start the split second that they're told they're ready, they can start. But it's a tough one when you know you're ready and your coach tells you ready, and maybe even a fitness coach tells you ready, but the rules of where you are tell you you're not, for whatever reason.
Yeah, exactly right. And I think it's always worth a conversation, isn't it, around that. And whilst, you know, people are in it's a litigious world, isn't it, at the moment, we need to make sure that everybody's covered. It's certainly worth a conversation to see where everybody's at. And a good strength and conditioning coach would be able to guide accordingly, or just to say, well, actually, we're not allowed to do that here because these are the rules and regs. So, but definitely have the conversation rather than just taking it as read would be my advice on that. The second thing is the opportunity that you have around your age is to learn some good technique around things like Olympic lifts. So a number of people who I've worked with in the past around your age, Bonga, are working with strength and conditioning coaches using just a bar, which can be 15 or 20 kilograms, or in fact even a broom handle, just to learn the different complex ways of lifting. And then by the time you do reach that age where they say you can start to use some of these weights, you've got the technique embedded, admittedly at a lower weight, that you can then start to gradually load the bar and load the weights accordingly. So it's a fantastic window for technical development in this stage of your life, and I'd encourage you to have the conversation with your gym trainer. You've got a good deal there. You're going down on a regular basis, but feeling a bit frustrated about the fact that you can't lift weights, it's a great time for you to work with your trainer on learning some technique.
There's also ways around being able to add external resistance without necessarily using what's traditionally called free weights. Especially, I think free weights is associated with a barbell and lots of weights on the barbell. Well, that's only one type of resistance. Perhaps Dumbbells are also off the menu. It will depend on the gym, but there's also, as you said, levers. There's things like sandbags which can be used. There's resistance bands which tend to be more commonly accepted, even though that is another form of external resistance. And even something like a kettlebell, often it slips through the net. And if you, you know, if you feel confident that you can use that with the correct technique, then there's always that option as well. So there are ways of doing it, but safety first, of course. Learn the good techniques, and where there's gaps in the program and you still feel like you need to work on them, use the machines as well. So yeah, a good balance between everything is the way to go.
I think one of them that I don't know if it slips through the net, but I think is widely accepted and something we talk about a lot is a med ball, just purely because of the way it's constructed. It's, the impact of a med ball, if it drops on somebody, isn't going to be anything like the impact of a weight. So yes, they're not quite as heavy, but you can get some pretty heavy med balls these days, and they can obviously be very, very useful. And in terms of just the worry of dropping it, it's not going to be anywhere near as dangerous as a dumbbell or a barbell would be. So that's a good avenue to go down if you've got one to hand or if you can get hold of one.
Let's know how you get on, Bonga. I'm sure you will. It's the weekly soapbox. A rant, an argument, a thought from one of the members of the team. This week, Sam Lavery has something to get us all thinking. Over to you, Lavers.
Okay, so all I'd like to think about is how leagues or associations or people who write the rules of the game or the laws of the game include junior cricketers in senior games of cricket. My team actually played a game on the weekend where a very young cricketer was selected in the other team, and he'd been selected for the previous 3 weeks as a 13-year-old. Wasn't batting, wasn't bowling, which first of all isn't an ideal situation with someone batting at 11 when they could be batting higher in the order and bowling at the same time. But when he came out to bat, the umpires said that they felt we couldn't bowl our quick bowlers at him, given it's a very important game for us. We said, well, he's number 11, we need this to win the game. We don't have a spinner on hand today because he's away. We feel like it isn't our option to not bowl. So one thing we asked the umpires is it our responsibility to not bowl a quick bowler, or is it their responsibility not to send the batter out? And if the batsman's not capable of batting in the level of cricket he's in, then should he be retired by the team, or should he remain as a not-out batsman who isn't actually going to face the bowlers on hand?
Okay, and that is the end of the show for this week. Just wrapping things up, here we go. We're going to decide on a winner of this week's competition, the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And Gareth, you had a decision to make. We've got Swap Neil and his question about his hip rotation when he's bowling, and Bog's question about free weights versus body weight training. Which one did you prefer?
Two great questions, two pretty good answers, I thought. I think we're getting quite good at this after 500 episodes. I'm going to go with Swamp Hill's one because I thought it was a good question that gave us enough detail with that video to explore a couple of avenues, which I hope will help him, but also maybe help some others that are listening in.
Congratulations. And you can also send in your questions to us if you are interested in winning that prize or even just getting your question answered. And Gareth, if someone wanted to do that, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call, David, on 0203 239 7543, or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That is correct. Our Twitter, you can send us questions through there, is @pitchvisionacad, and you can find us on Facebook by going to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy if you want to use the Facebook. You can also subscribe to this show every week. It's pretty easy these days. Just go to the podcast program of your choice or app of your choice. Do a search for us and you'll find us in there by searching for Pitch Vision Academy, no problem. iTunes, Podcasts, Downcast, Overcast, Dogcatcher, we're in all of them. And if you want to use the RSS feed instead, then you go to pitchvision.com/academy. click on the podcast link for all the details on the RSS feed. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Labours.
Cheers, fellas.
Thanks, guys.